This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Kelly Anissa. It has been more than a year since the Pakatan Harapan government came into power. And yet, as it currently stands, Malaysia is still one of the few nations that have yet to ratify the United Nations Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhuman or Degrading Treatment or Punishment, or better known as UNCTAD. We revisit Pakatan's promise to ratify this convention and what are some of the obstacles that stand in the way of it. Joining me on the show today is Abdul Wahab Hani. He is a committee member of this convention. Thank you for joining me on the show today. Maybe we can just go back to basics. You know, tell me more about UNCTAD, which is the United Nations Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhuman or Degrading Treatment or Punishment. You know, what is this convention really about?
The Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhuman or Degrading Treatment or Punishment was adopted by the General Assembly of the United Nations on 1984. Why? To combat torture, to prevent torture. Torture is prohibited by the Universal Declaration for Human Rights of 1948 and by the International Covenant on Political and Civil Rights of 1966. But the international community at this period, the 70s, 80s, found that it is urgent at this time to adopt a new binding international instrument to prohibit torture, to criminalize torture, and to prevent from the acts of torture. Mm. The convention was adopted in 1984, the entrance in force on 1987, and now we have 166 state party to the convention, who ratified the convention, and six other signatory waiting their ratification. And remain some other state not yet party to the convention, including Malaysia. And they hope that we'll reach the universal ratification of the convention by 2024. Why? In order to commemorate our 40th anniversary with the universal ratification. The convention established a comprehensive framework to combat torture and to prevent from torture. With the definition of torture, it's the first time when we have an international binding instrument with a definition, clear definition of torture. Second, with a clear provision on prevention of torture, on training and education on prevention of torture, on criminalization of torture, on rehabilitation of victims of torture, on different other aspects dealing with torture. The prevention established certain provisions, legal provisions, to help all countries to fight against this crime.
And you know, what are the other countries who are not signatory to this convention?
More of them are small developing countries, small islands, like in the Caribbean states, like in Pacific small island, in some African state. And we have in ASEAN, six state party to the convention from the 10 member of ASEAN. We still have Malaysia and Singapore remain. We are waiting the ratification. And two other states from the ASEAN group, Myanmar and Brunei Darussalam, they sign and they give their political will with the signatory, waiting their ratification. Inside the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, from 57 countries, we have 51 state party to the convention. It means that the majority of the two regional groups of Malaysia, ASEAN and OIC, are a party to the convention. We still have, we still wait India, Sudan, Oman, Malaysia, Iran, Myanmar, and other small island countries.
So you did say that there is, you know, now there is a more clear and precise definition of what constitutes as torture. So, so how does the UN define that? Can you tell us a little bit more about this new, this clear definition of what it, what torture means?
Any act who inflict pain intentionally in order to extract confession information or to punish people for any kind of discrimination. It means that we have three elements of the definition. The act of torture itself, cruel, inhuman or degrading treatment, who result on the pain, harmful pain, the physical or psychological or mental torture also. The quality of the actor, the public servant, directly or by his order, under his order or by his acquiescence. And the third aspect, the purpose of torture to extract confession or information. Mm. This is a very clear definition of torture. And when we review the state party report, because the Committee Against Torture is the body who control, who supervise the implementation of this provision by all state parties to the convention. We see that many state parties like Malaysia prohibit the use of coercion, prohibit the use of force, prohibit torture, in fact. But we need to align the national definition of torture and ill treatment with the international definition enshrined in the convention.
So 2 years ago, I remember that you said the reasonable time frame for the ratification would be between 6 to 18 months, and that was in 2017. And then last year, that still didn't happen. Malaysia had not been, we had not ratified that convention yet. What has the progress been so far moving forward? What has been the cause of that delay?
First of all, the decision by the Prime Minister, the announcement by the Prime Minister Mahathir in September 2018, a few months ago, in New York, in the General Assembly of the United Nations, that Malaysia will move to ratify the 6 remaining international instruments, including the UN Convention Against Torture. And this is an expression of a political will. And also the government, the new government, put the ratification in the manifesto, point 26 of the manifesto, which is an engagement with the national level and international level also. And other, the announcement by the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Shamsuddin, in Geneva last March, that Malaysia will move to ratify as soon as possible after public consultation. And in the same time, the National Human Rights Institution of Malaysia, SOACAM, do very nice work on public awareness campaign. Recently, they engaged also with the cartoonist against torture, a very nice campaign. And also the third part is the civil society who is engaged now for the ratification of the convention and the prevention of torture. And I met both the secular groups and the Islamist religious group. It means that both parties of the society, the progressist one or liberal one and the conservative one, are united against torture, are united for the ratification of the convention. And also I met last year the Mufti Wilaya, who confirmed to me that there are no religious obstacle or cultural obstacle to ratification of the convention. It means that the whole society, the state agencies, the National Human Rights Institution, the civil society, the religious leaders are ready now to move to the ratification. The government now needs more time to launch a public consultation, which is legitimate. And also they launch their own work, internal work, to see how laws or practice need to be amended or aligned with the international norm enshrined in the convention. And I see that the framework I gave, 6 to 18 months, was respected, not for the ratification, but for the announcement of the political will, who is, I think, a very important step. Now, when it comes to the official act of ratification, the government have a position that he need more time to conduct this public consultation. But I think the public consultation start now with the civil society act for CAT campaign, with the SOACAM campaign also, and the internally work done by the state agencies. I met His Excellency the Attorney General, and he mentioned to me there are no problem technically we can move. We need the political will, the decision by the cabinet, but as the administrative level, the state is ready now to move, which is, I think, a good sign. Come some sensitive aspects like the corporal punishment in the penal code, in the Sharia, some Sharia punishment in the state level, corporal punishment in schools, but other aspects also dealing with use of force, dealing with the complaint mechanism if something wrong happened into the hand of the police, the migration issues, etc., etc. There are different topics. And the Attorney General mentioned to me yesterday and to the delegation of SOACAM that they start their own internal work, which is, I think, very good. It means now that we have this situation of this ongoing work on preparation and on consultation. My point as member of the UN United Nations Committee Against Torture, that the ratification is not the exit point. It's the entry point, the first point to start the cooperation with the committee, Against Torture, and to start the long way of the reform. There are no perfect situation. You cannot say, okay, now that we have a clean 100%, and now we can move to the ratification. The ratification is to start this work of reform, amendment of law, alignment, harmonization of national law, practice mechanisms with the international norm.
I am speaking to Abdel Wahab Hani. He is a committee member of the United Nations Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhuman or Degrading Treatment or Punishment, better known as UNCTAD. And we are revisiting Pakatan's promise to ratify this convention. We'll be right back after the short break. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture and I'm Kelly Anissa. I'm speaking to Abdel Wahab Hani. He is a committee member of the United Nations Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhuman or Degrading Treatment or Punishment, or better known as UNCTAD. We are revisiting Pakatan's promise to ratify this convention. So, a regional dialogue was hosted recently, which aimed to provide a platform for the sharing of best practices among the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, or better known as the OIC, and as well as with the Association of Southeast Asian or ASEAN States regarding the accession to and the implementation of the convention in a more local context. So, this took place just recently. I'm just curious, when you state local context, what does that mean really? Is the concept of torture implemented or understood differently? Does the context differ in different countries?
Yes, I think because the Convention Against Torture have some provision with a legal dimension. You need to amend some laws in order to be in line with the definition of torture and also the different other provision. And this regional dialogue was organized by SOACAM in order to seek best practices from other contexts in the context of OIC, the Islamic countries. And we heard from good experience from Indonesia and from Morocco, who are both a party of the convention. And also I mentioned some good experience and best practices coming from the OIC group, OIC country, from Kuwait, from Tunisia, from Morocco, from Saudi Arabia, from Kuwait, from different other regions. Even in a very difficult situation, we have some best practices in prevention of torture.
And what were the key takeaways from that dialogue?
The more important thing that we need to implement the convention, taking in account the local context. but also to implement the convention, taking in mind that we need a step-by-step approach. You cannot clean 100% and come later on to the UN that, okay, we are ready now to sell our product outside. This is not like the trade conventions, like certification ISO 9000, etc. You can, okay, now you are ready to sell your product in the United States, on Europe, or in China. No, for human rights conventions and instruments are in another spirit, the spirit of the continuous work and the spirit also to face challenges, because challenges change. The situation in Malaysia now on 2019 is nothing to do with the situation in Malaysia with 1984. And for this reason, the jurisprudence itself of the UN Committee Against Torture, who is the treaty body controlling and supervising the implementation of the convention, move and evaluate also. We address more and more new topics, new issues. For example, the situation of people deprived from their liberty in the psychiatric institutions and healthcare, mental healthcare institutions, situation for old person, for young people, situation at school. If you open the door, and you journalists, we have this this attitude to open the door. What happened after the door? When you open the door, you discover that many wrong things in this institution. And the spirit of the convention is the prevention of torture. It means that you have, as society, as state, you have the right to deprive some person from their liberty by judicial decision, administrative decision, or medical decision. It is the right of the society. But you don't have any right to deprive this person from their dignity, from their fundamental rights. Because if you treat them like an animals, at the end of the day, you produce this monster. But if you treat them with humanity, you can expect that after the term of their prison, or when we leave this institution, judicial or prison or other institutions, they can return to the right way in the society. Because the rule of justice is not just the punishment, is the rule to re-educate people again and to return to the right way in the society. And the negative impact of torture is horrible, horrible on the persons, because you can arrest an innocent people, put him in jail, and under pressure, physical and psychiatric pressure, he can sign any confession. But you fail to arrest the right criminal who is outside the prison. You destroy the image of the police, you destroy the image of the state, and you destroy the confidence between the people and their rulers, between the people and the government, between the people and the state agencies and the law enforcement agencies. For this reason, the former Special Rapporteur on Torture, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Torture, Mr. Juan Mendes, proposed in his report in October 2016 to elaborate a new practical guidelines or manual of investigations without torture, in order to allow to police and to the judiciary the possibility to fight against the crime, to protect the right of their people, the right to life, the right to security, in due respect of their human rights obligations. And now this work is an ongoing work, and I hope that by March 2020, in few months, this work will be presented to the United Nations Human Rights Council, and later in September 2020 in the General Assembly of the United Nations, to be adopted as a manual, as a guidelines of interrogation free of torture.
So how has the change in government, you know, we have a new government now, how has the shift in administration with Pakatan changed this conversation? How have they affected the our progress in terms of ratifying this convention?
I think the primary level, the cabinet level, the ministerial level, we have this political engagement by the Prime Minister Mahathir and the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Shamsuddin. On the secondary level, on the administrative level, I think there are change. I see this change between 2017 and now. There are more engagement to deal with the convention. There are more engagement to look to the details of the convention, the implication on amendment of some laws or regulation, which is, I think, a very good step. We see this change now in this administrative level, and I hope that the administrative level can help also the political level to move as soon as possible to ratify the convention.
And how long would it take for developing countries like Malaysia to get there? I mean, you know, we've been having this conversation for a while now. So, you know, how long do you think it will take before we finally say yes and we commit to it?
If the cabinet decided, it will take a few days. Mm-hmm. But I think now the government need more time to do this work on public consultation. The public consultation started now with all these events and actions. It depends on the time taken by this public consultation, but I think few months are sufficient to Malaysia to move to the ratification. And after, we are expecting the first report of Malaysia in order to help Malaysia with our expertise as a committee to address some challenges to harmonize its national law and practices with the international norm.
And you mentioned now that, you know, there is a format on how to conduct interrogations without the use of torture. And then, of course, there is the introduction of a definition of what torture means. So these are all new. So they were not here before this. You know, how do you think that would shift the ongoing discussions on this? You know, how do you think that helps encourage these other countries to be party to this convention? You know, how do you think that changes this entire discourse?
The first one, I think we need to make this convention closer to people. Mm. And the first step now is to translate the text of the convention to Mali. Mm-hmm. To the local language. And I think it's good also to do this kind of work. The second, we need more training for lawyers, for NGOs, for judges, for police, for security agencies, in order to allow them the opportunity to do their work in due respect of their ethics and in due respect of human rights obligation of the state. And for this reason, I think there are many amendments, and the government of Malaysia announced in March that there are an ongoing work on reviewing law and standard operating procedures, especially inside the police, and the establishment of an enforcement agency, integrity commission, and another commission on complaint mechanism. If something wrong, people mm-hmm. can apply against this violation. Malaysia, like other states, need this kind of institution, because to fight against torture, you need a strong legal framework, strong laws. You need also a strong education, training in order to change the culture. And you need also strong institutions to control, like the National Human Rights Constitution of Malaysia, SWACAM, and perhaps the establishment of a national preventive mechanism later. But you need also a public awareness, the role of media, the role of civil society, the role of the Bar Association is very important and crucial in order to control that there are nothing wrong in this situation of deprivation of liberty. Because if you accept that, okay, we can accept some wrong thing, violation in this situation of deprivation of liberty in prison because he's a wrong person, bad person, you'll be sure that in few months the logic of this unlawful culture and spirit will diffuse inside the society. And to take the example of United States. When they established Guantanamo, they violate their rights, not just for people in Guantanamo, but outside Guantanamo. This is like a disease. If you accept a disease here, okay, malaria for these people, it's okay, we can accept it. You'll be sure that in a few months you can infect the whole society. You cannot accept an unlawful zone inside the state, a democratic state.
And when you say, you mentioned culture as well, that that's something that needs to be addressed. And, you know, why is culture such an integral part of this? When, because I think that for a lot of people or for the general public, or, you know, just that there is that general idea that torture is bad. So why is that so distinctive in different cultures?
Yeah. When I mentioned culture, I mentioned the culture of violence inside police and the enforcement state agencies, because sometimes in some situation, the idea that, okay, you can beat people, it's normal, it's part of the procedure. Mm-hmm. No, you can arrest people, but you cannot beat them. You can arrest them. You have the power to arrest, you have the mandate to arrest, but not to ill-treat these people or torture these people. When it comes to torture, sometimes in some situation under the influence of some media, for example, we see in United States, for example, and in other democratic states, that people are accept sometimes that, okay, for terrorists, you can torture them. We see this discourse mm-hmm. around the world. It means that we need this public awareness. Violence cannot solve any problem. Torture cannot solve any problem. Ill treatment cannot solve any problem. You have other methods, you have other techniques to save the life, to respect and to guarantee the right of your people to life, their right, their fundamental right, their right to security also, without using torture or ill treatment. And we need this cultural change by training, by awareness program, by media program. And I see this very nice campaign launched by cartoonists against torture, because you can touch people with this history, with these cartoons. Mm.
And I know you have addressed this indirectly throughout this conversation, but can we go into the specifics of why certain countries are reluctant to ratify UNCTAD? You know, why are some of these countries feel very reluctant when it comes to this convention?
Some countries sometimes present this cultural argument about religion, about some punishment or their culture. I want to mention that when we review the situation in country like Malaysia, we raise many questions dealing with police, with justice, with laws, with the right to rehabilitation of victims, prevention of torture, etc., etc. And some countries come with one specific question, like, for example, the corporal punishment. Our committee have a strong position on it. We consider that corporal punishment are against the purpose of the convention, because this corporal punishment attempt to the dignity of human being. And there are other alternative measures to this corporal punishment. We are not against, the convention is not against Islam or Christianity or the common law or the penal code, the Napoleonian penal code or civil code. The discussion of the committee is about the act of torture or ill-treatment or punishment. If you can move to an alternative measures, everybody will be happy. The society will be happy, the justice system will be happy, and also you respect your human rights. There are no provision in the convention against Islam or against Christianity. We are not discussing the nature of the offenses of the crime. This thing is wrong for your society. It's a crime, is a crime. This is not a discussion. Mm-hmm. We respect the sovereign decision of the state to consider this crime as a crime, this act as a crime. Our discussion is about the punishment, like for the capital punishment. We don't have a position against the death penalty, but the condition of execution of the death penalty can amount to torture or ill-treatment. Mm. For example, people waiting in death row years and years and years, 10, 15 years, this is kind of mental torture. The public executions in the public place with the presence or the of children, for example, of the accused person, is kind of torture also, psychological torture against children. It means that our discussion is about the punishment and the condition of executions of punishment. You can have a legitimate sanctions, prison, for example, it's a legitimate sanction, but you cannot add another violence to this legitimate sanction. The condition in prison, the surpopulation, the overcrowding in prison, it's kind of torture or at least ill treatment. This is the discussion made by the committee.
So if a country were to be a signatory, if they were to ratify this convention, is there a specific time frame that's supposed to take place? And like once they are, you know, okay, let's say Malaysia says, oh, okay, we'll do it. We'll, you know, we'll sign the convention. What happens next? You know, what sort, you know, what is the process like once that is initiated? How long before they, you know, they have to make these legal changes to the constitution? Yeah.
The first step, some state, they sign before and they take time to amend or to prepare themselves and they ratify later. Like Ireland, for example, they took 10 years or other country, they took few years. But when the state party ratify the convention, the state, the country have 1 year to prepare its initial report to the United Nations Committee Against Torture, committee of experts composed by 10 individual experts serving with our individual capacity, with total independence from any influence from any kind, and also on a voluntary basis. And the initial report is designed to construct the dialogue between the state, the country, and the treaty body and the committee. And the objective of this first report and later the periodic report is to help the state party with a very practical recommendation. It means that, look, here your definition of torture, it's good, but you can improve this definition in order to meet the international standard. You can have a better definition than the United Nations definition, but you need to incorporate the United Nations definition. Some state party, they choose just to amend one article in their penal code to introduce this crime. Some others, they choose to enact a new anti-torture act. But this is a sovereign decision by a state. There are different models. Mm-hmm. Our role as a committee is to help the state party to give some kind of orientation to the priority. You need to amend this law, you need to change this practice, you need to train your people, your police on the provision of the convention, you need to train your physicians on this manual of investigation of and documentation of acts of torture, you need to amend perhaps this procedure on rehabilitation of victims of torture and ill treatment. And we try to put a very pragmatic recommendation to the state party. And the state party have time to implement this recommendation. We select 3 to 4 urgent recommendations to follow in the framework of 1 year. And to answer to your question, after the report, after the review of the report in Geneva, we give 1 year to the state party to answer to the urgent recommendations, like a sample, you see 3 to 4 urgent recommendations. And we assess, we evaluate the quality of the information sent by the state and also the degree of implementation. And we have a scale, full implementation, and they can assure you that less than 10% of the situation when we have a full implementation of our recommendation, we have more than 55-60% between initial step of implementation or substantive step of implementation. Unfortunately, you have some cases without any implementation. But state party, the state's government have time to implement our recommendation, and we are very pragmatic. We doesn't choose in this urgent recommendation the recommendation with legislative change because it took times. And some state party came to before the committee, the first report, the second report, the 7th periodic report. It means every 4 or 5 years they return again. And they told us, look, this recommendation is okay, but this other to change the law, it's very difficult for us because we doesn't have the majority now to do it, but we promised to you to establish a commission to work on it. We are fine with this. Mm-hmm. But because the idea is to guide the states, the country, to implement this recommendation. We are not an army to come with see our police or our arms. You need to do this today before tomorrow. No, we are in this pragmatic approach, in this step-by-step approach.
It's good. So that was going to be my next question, actually. You know, what would happen if, a country were to, what would happen if they didn't live up to these promises that they've made? Is it legally binding? Could there be any form of legal action taken against a state for not, living up to those promises?
No. With our all treaty bodies of human rights are based on a recommendation. At the end of the process, you have a recommendation and the follow-up of recommendation. We encourage state party to implement our recommendation, but we listen to their challenges, to the difficulties they face in the process of implementation of our recommendation. And we listen also to their new challenges. But the other body, the Human Rights Council, the UN Security Council, can use our funding. But as our work is to recommend to state parties certain things to meet their international obligation and to also to give our expertise. Our committee was established on April 1988. It means that more than 30 years of expertise. Mm-hmm. And we assess the situation in now 166 state parties. It means that the committee had accumulated this experience, this expertise around the world. We seek also best practices from the different reviews and we give them to other state parties in the same condition, et cetera, et cetera. It means that our role is to give, to provide our expertise and to help state party by our recommendation. It's, if you want, a soft international mechanism of cooperation on the field of human rights.
So we have ratified other conventions in the past as well. I mean, for example, the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, or better known as CEDAW, and the Convention on the Rights of the Child, or CRC. Do you think there is anything we can draw from from that experience, when it comes to helping with this conversation today?
Malaysia have this good experience by ratifying these two very interesting instrument, the Convention Against the Rights of Children and the Convention Against Any Kind of Discrimination Against Women. And Malaysia start its long way of reforms, many amendments of law, establishment of new procedures, some agencies, change of culture, training programs. And I think Malaysia can use the same process by ratifying the United Nations Convention Against Torture and to drive the reforms later.
Mm. And what role can the community play, if any at all, in pushing this forward?
I think more campaign with the people, more engagement with the different leaders of the society, and I think especially more engagement with the religious leaders. The meeting I had with His Excellency the Mufti was excellent, the Mufti Wilaya, and I encourage our colleagues in the human rights family to engage more with the traditional leader and the religious leader. Why? Because they have an impact on the society. They can help on the right way. They can help also on the wrong way. And especially the religious discourse, they can manipulate it in the positive sense to protect the human dignity. They can be manipulated also in the wrong manner. And we see many legitimation of terrorist attacks with some religious discourse, etc. And I think especially in a country with Muslim majority. I come myself from Tunisia, a country with Muslim majority. And the image of our religion now sometimes is bad because we try to reduce religion to some smallest aspects. And we give a very bad image of our religion that Islam is against human rights. No, Islam is a religion of peace. Islam is a religion of dignity. Islam is a religion of coexistence between different people, different opinion, different branches of Islam or other religion. We accept all others. We are the latest religion, and we accept all others or other religions, and we respect them. And I think we need to construct this dialogue between human rights field and the faith-based organization, that the common objective of human rights defenders and of religious leaders is respect of dignity. In the Quran, وَلَقَدْ كَرَّمْنَا بَنِي آدَمَ, the God create us with dignity. We need to protect this dignity because God protect our dignity and create us with dignity. And I think this is a common language. We need to found this common language. And we need also to engage these religious and traditional leaders, not from Islam, from other minorities also, in this way of respect of a human being and the peaceful society and the peaceful coexistence between people. I think this is my advice to my friend here in Malaysia. The second aspect also that you don't need to clean everything and to amend all laws because it will take time. So you never be ready to do it. Ratify the convention, accept this international norm, who is accepted now and directly by Malaysia in different provision, constitution, laws, etc., and start this long way of reform. Reforms can be driven by this recommendation. You benefit from this recommendation free of charge by your ratification and your constructive dialogue with the International Committee Against Torture.
Do you have a final message?
Yeah. I think that Malaysia, as a great nation with a strong economy now, with a functioning democracy, with a peaceful society also, need to address a message to the world that Malaysia also is part of the international community of democracies and of free torture state. Malaysia have an important role, in regional role in ASEAN, but regional role also inside OIC. And I think it can, it will be grateful if Malaysia ratify the convention, because it can help Malaysia also to play this role at the international arena, and also to give more opportunity to build more confidence between the state, the government, and the people on the ground.
See, thank you very much, Abdul Wahab.
Thank you.
I was speaking to Abdul Wahab Hani. He is a committee member of the United Nations Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhuman or Degrading Treatment or Punishment, or better known as UNCAT. And we were revisiting Pakatan's promise to ratify this convention. If you've missed any part of this interview or any Live and Learn segment, you can download the podcast on the BFM app, available on Google Play, the App Store and also on Spotify. You've been listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.